Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Hungry Planet when we come back. You know, in Leviticus 19, verse 19, it tells us, "You shall not sow your field with mingled seed." Well, hybrid seed and genetically modified organisms are a crime. They violate the law of God. A study from Cornell University says that an increasingly popular commercial corn, genetically engineered to produce a bacterial toxin to protect it against corn pests, has an unwanted side effect. Its pollen kills monarch butterflies and the monarch butterfly larva in laboratory tests. The questions that Cornell left unanswered are even more telling. What else does it kill? Surely butterflies aren't the only unintended victims here. Poisons, after all, aren't too picky. Does it cause mutations? And if so, what plants, animals, or insects are affected? When do you know if you're eating it? Is it in your grits? Is it in your cornbread? We know it turned up in Taco Bell tortillas some years back. If it's in a food product, will it be labeled as containing genetically modified organisms, also known as GMOs? Will the stores pull those products from the shelves like they did with the tortillas when they got caught? Or will they just ignore the problem and then look the other way? Well, so far, government, the Department of Agriculture, the Food and Drug Administration, and the multinational seed and petrochemical and food processing corporations have totally ignored critics of the agricultural biotech who want the government, at the very least, to label these foods as being GMOs. Well, in this battle between your health and safety and the financial interests of the multinational seed and food processing companies, you lose. Well, you lose unless you have your own non-hybrid, open-pollinated seed that are not genetically modified. Now, if you'd like to know more about this multinational corporate monopoly of our seed and food supplies and how you can become independent from them, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package today? That's free of charge. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and it's free of charge. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and you can download it right there off of our website. That's georgegordon.org. Go to the archives page. All right, we've been talking about this thing of Hungry Planet. It's a book, an unusual book. I rated it about 1 in 20. There's a lot of books out there that deal with food, GMOs, hybridized food, one thing and another. But this book caught my eye because it takes 30 families around the world, not starving families, 30 families from 24 countries, and then analyzes what these people eat every week and how much it costs them. The thrust of the article, or the thrust of the book here, is to show what the vast differences are. And I showed you a little earlier that one family of 15 in Mali feed themselves on 8 cents per meal per person. So you got 15 people in the family. They spend $26 a week on food. And I thought that was amazing. Now, my wife told me years ago that she has a number of recipes in which she can feed people here in America, just here, on 25 cents per person per meal. 25 cents. And I thought that was pretty remarkable. Now, come to find out, 25 cents is really low. We're eating pinto beans, cornbread, rice, corn, millet, wheat. We're eating grains is what we're doing, but the grains have to be spiced in order to make them palatable. You got to have some salt and pepper, and some peppers and one thing and another to spice it up with. And while you don't have meat and McDonald's and Coca-Cola, you have a healthy, nutritious diet that is very inexpensive. And that was the thing that caught my eye. So let me give you a couple of more examples here. In Cuba, for instance, the Cubans are pretty poor. Have been historically, but since the communists took over back in 1960, it's been pretty dramatic, their poverty down there in Cuba. Now, surprisingly, there's a Cuban family here that they interviewed, four people in the family. The man, the husband, and the boy, who looks to be about 8 or 10 years old, are a little on the chunky side. I mean, they've been eating plenty. The two women, a teenage girl and the wife, look like they're of a normal build and normal health. They're not skinny. They're not undernourished by any stretch of the imagination. But to demonstrate that they have plenty to eat, they have meat, fish, and eggs. Chicken, 3.3 pounds, pork chops, 2.2 pounds, egg ration, 12, fish, 1.1 pound, and a pork leg, frozen, 1 pound. Now, the fish was caught. They went out to the ocean. They live in Havana. They went down to the bay, and they were out fishing, and they caught this fish. But they added it in. If they would have bought that fish down at the market, what would that have cost them? And so they put that in. Now, they live on $56.76 a week. Now, the government gives them a ration. And I'm not quite sure how the ration system works or how much they get on rations and how much they buy in the free marketplace or how the free marketplace works. But the cost is $56.76 for the week, which works out to be something like this. Let's see if I can find them. Cuba City. They've got, it's under a dollar here. Let's see what the number was. Cuba, here it is. 67 cents per person. 67 cents per meal for the week per person. There's four people in the family. The second one over here I thought I'd bring to your attention is in Egypt. Now, this is a bigger family. They've got 11 people in the family. And their food bill is $68.53 per week. I'm looking at the entire panoply of the family here. And I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4 who are overweight. Four people out of 11 here are definitely overweight, not obese, but the other members here are children and 1, 2, 3 adults. So of the 11, three adults are of normal build and stature. They're not overweight. And of the children, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 children, all of those are normal. This one teenage girl, I'd say, is normal. But here I want to emphasize again, these people are not starving to death by any stretch of the imagination, and they have the entire week's worth of food that these people eat in the week sitting out here, and they photographed it. This is their normal shopping. And it points out such things as grains and other starchy foods, potatoes 8.8 pounds, rice 6.6 pounds, ground nut mix, flour 2.2 pounds. 2.2 pounds of macaroni, dairy, they got milk powder, 6.6 pounds, butter, 4.4 pounds, white cheese, salted, 2.2 pounds, white cheese, unsalted, 2.2 pounds, Italian cheese, sliced, 1.1 pound. So they eat quite a bit in the way of dairy here. Meat, fish, and eggs, farm chicken, 16.5 pounds, lamb meat, 8.8 pounds. Now the meat and meals are often shared with Nadia's brother, his wife, and their two small children. Extended Egyptian families often live together or nearby, and they eat together frequently, especially during holiday times. Eggs, 25. Tuna, canned, 3 pounds. Beef burger patties, 1.1 pound. Frozen beef, 1.1 pound. Borden corned beef, canned, 14 ounces, and pickled meat, 8.8 ounces. Now, here's the point. These people are living on something like, here's Egypt City over here, Arabs, 11 of them, $68, 29 cents per person per day. And, you know, here in the United States, if you're buying meat, it's going to cost you some bucks. I don't deny that. But basically what these people are eating over here are fruits, vegetables, lots of fruits and lots of vegetables here. And they're not eating out. Here in the United States, you know, when you're in a U.S. diet, you have to add in what you're spending at McDonald's and what you're eating out in the restaurants. These people don't eat out. That's one of the common denominators that you see here with just about everybody that's here, save for the Americans. There's three American families back here in the back of the book. And, you know, these people are eating out at the Pizza Hut, and they're buying their pizza. And it all has to be added in, you know, to the weekly food bill, which in one case is $400 and some. Now, last time we brought up the subject of GMOs. Now, here's another factor here. As we go through the book here, these people in these foreign countries are not eating GMOs. They're avoiding GMO like AIDS, herpes, and VD. So let me give you a story here that comes from the SalemNews.com. That's SalemNews.com. Which deals with GM food. SalemNews.com, March 1st, 2010. While we were sleeping, GM food in the brink of no return. Monsanto's patented genes are inserted into roughly 95% of soybeans and 80% of corn crops grown in the United States. If you eat anything that's got soybeans or corn in it, you're eating a GMO, unless you're buying organic. The only way that you can avoid GMOs is by eating organic, at least those two basic crops. And then there's a third one here called canola oil. About 80% of the canola is also GMO. If you're eating any kind of cottonseed oil, nearly 100% of the cottonseed is GMO. The United States Supreme Court will hear arguments in April for the first time about the safety of genetically engineered crops and their potential for contamination of nearby conventional crops in Geertsen Seed Farms versus USDA and Monsanto. The owner of Geertsen's Seed Farms, Idaho, farmer Phil Geertsen's, G-E-E-R-T-S-O-N, in case you want to look up that case, Geertsen, is the lead plaintiff in the case. The 2006 lawsuit was filed by the Center for Food Safety on behalf of Geertsen and other farmers who worry about GE crop contamination of their conventionally grown alfalfa. Only now are millions of Americans waking up to the fact that an estimated 75% of our processed foods contain some form of genetically modified ingredients, according to the Center for Food Safety. Now keep in mind, boys and girls, that GE, that's genetically modified organisms or genetically engineered crops, do not have to be labeled on the food products that you buy. So if you walk in, let's say, and you're buying a package of tofu, you can just about bet that package of tofu is made from soybeans that are genetically engineered, unless, of course, it's organic. And it'll generally say on the package, no GMOs or organic. Then you can be pretty sure. Otherwise, if you're just buying a package of Wheat Thins in the store and you look on the ingredients list and it says sweetened with corn syrup or high fructose corn syrup, well, you can just about bet that that corn syrup came from corn that was genetically modified, which shows us that about 75% of those foods now in the store have some kind of GE product in it. And they don't have to label that. They don't have to tell you that. Now, the author here of the article says, only now are millions of Americans waking up to the fact that an estimated 75% of our processed foods contain some form of genetically modified ingredients. And I'm asking the question, what do you mean, only now? This has been in the news. It's been around for 20 years. 20 years. It's been commercial for 13. So if Americans don't know about GE by now, they should just go back to sleep and forget about it. In the next paragraph, they start off, they say, many consumers don't understand the process used to develop these GM foods that have been deemed substantially equivalent to other foods by executive order, and therefore bypassed with little regulation to the public without their knowledge or their consent. I might point out, it's also without their objection. You aren't listening to any Americans over here objecting. Oh, there's a few odd screwballs, you know, like the author of this article here, that are objecting to GM foods. The rest of the people in the country not only don't know, they don't care. Now, I know, and I'm reporting it to you, and I'm a plumber, and I get my news and my sources just like you do from Brian Williams, Katie Couric, and I get them from the Lair News Hour. I mean, come on, the local news, just like everybody else. Now, there's a couple of three books here that I'm going to pass on to you here so that you can educate yourself if you're of a mind to. You know, if you're not of a mind to, you certainly don't want to spend any money trying to educate yourself about genetically engineered foods or about famine or something like that. I don't want to disturb your day and give you a heart attack or something. But remember the three books. Hungry Planet's number one. That's the one we're reviewing. Written by Peter Menzel and Faith D'Aluzio. Hungry Planet. You can get all three of these books, by the way. Just jot this down. It's Baker Creek Seeds, Mansfield, Missouri. You can look them up on heirloomseeds.com. Heirloomseeds.com. Second book, Genetic Roulette, Jeffrey M. Smith. Genetic Roulette. I believe that same book came from Baker Creek Seeds. Third one over here is Seeds of Deception. I believe it's written by the same guy, Jeffrey M. Smith. Seeds of Deception, Genetic Roulette, and Hungry Planet. Those three books. Pretty heavy-duty reading. And it probably will save your life if you're of a mind to. If you're of a mind to. Now, if you aren't, as we progress through this article here, I'm going to show you that there's some health problems. Health problems. I reported to you that the three big events, the three big promises that GE was going to deliver, they were going to go easy on the environment, they were going to produce more food, and it produces less food, not more. It takes more of these compounds, more of these pesticides. And they said it was going to be healthful and nutritious, and we found out that it isn't healthful and nutritious, that it causes sterility and a whole host and plethora of other health problems. And I'm of the opinion that it was created and designed with the intent to cause bad health and kill people. That's my conspiracy mind working for you. And then I'll tell you why as we progress along. But going on in the article here, the process behind genetically modified food involves a careful reconfiguration of genes combining E. coli bacteria, soil bacteria, and the cauliflower mosaic virus that causes tumors in plants. They add an antibiotic and then artificially force it into the plant cells with a gene invasion technique. All of this is done so that farmers can douse nearly unlimited amounts of Roundup herbicide on the crops and the plants won't die. And as a result of this, we're now putting in millions of pounds of more herbicides than we were before using hybrid seed. Now keep in mind that God himself told us not to do this in Leviticus 19, verse 19. So I'm not here to castigate you. I'm just here to tell you that we've been told don't do that, and we're doing it anyway. And there's an outcome coming from it. There's going to be a penalty to pay for the violation of this law. And so let's bear that one in mind. Now, they don't even know how their practices will affect the environment. And out of 800 reviewed GE food applications submitted to the USDA, no environmental impact statements were conducted. So, for the rest of us, you know, if we want to do something like this, we've got to get some EPA environmental impact statements. These guys don't. They're exempted. The USDA just released a draft of its first EIS, Environmental Impact Statement, on December the 14th of 09. A 60-day comment period is open until March 3rd, 2010. Their final decision will have broad implications for all GE crops. You can rest assured that the USDA, which holds some of the patents for this GE-type plants, is going to approve the process. Rest assured. There should be no doubt in your mind. The process behind genetically modified food involves a careful reconfiguration of genes combining E. coli bacteria, soil bacteria, and the cauliflower mosaic virus that causes tumors in plants. They add an antibiotic and then artificially force it into the plant cells with a gene invasion technique. And all of this is done so that farmers can douse unlimited amounts of Roundup herbicide on the crops so that the plants won't die. Now, this has been going on since 1945, and it's a violation of Leviticus 19:19. And it's done because we won't practice land Sabbaths and Jubilees, which are required by God himself in Leviticus chapter 25. Now, we're smarter than God, and we're going to use chemicals and technology to do what God himself couldn't do or wouldn't do. Monsanto started its operations in 1901 as a chemical company. Their first product was saccharin, a coal tar product, otherwise known as Sweet and Low. Monsanto's past also embraces some of the world's most controversial developments, like Agent Orange, aspartame, dioxin, sulfuric acid, AstroTurf, polychlorinated biphenyls, also known as PCBs, plastics, and synthetic fabrics. Research on uranium for the Manhattan Project that led to the construction of the nuclear bombs, styrene monomer, an endless line of pesticides and herbicides such as Roundup, RBGH, the recombinant bovine growth hormone, genetically engineered crops, corn, potatoes, tomatoes, soybeans, cotton, and much more. Now, there's a little bit of good news here. This RGBH has not been outlawed, but farmers who used it quit because it killed so many of their cows. I mean, it really tears up your dairy herd, so they quit using it voluntarily. So if you're drinking milk out of the stores, it isn't fit for human consumption because it's pasteurized and homogenized. That's number one. But in addition to that, if it's got this RBGH in it, then that makes it about double, maybe triple worse for you. But they've taken that out, so now it's just ordinary poison. It's not super poison. In January of 2010, the U.S. Department of Justice began investigating charges against Monsanto for violations of antitrust and monopoly laws stemming from their GE soybean product. Public hearings will be held this spring. Justice Department spokesman Gina Talamona confirmed antitrust regulators have begun a formal investigation of the seed industry. Okay, you can rest assured that nothing will come of that investigation. These people are absolutely the untouchables. And even if, perchance, there should be some antitrust activity uncovered, they will merely be fined a few million dollars, which to these people is chump change. This is a multi-billion dollar industry, and getting fined $50 million is the dust on the cash register shelf. Has nothing to do with profitability. So don't be concerned now about any kind of revelations coming out of the Justice Department or changes being made in the food processing or the seed business. Taint gonna happen. Now, many scientists have expressed concern that the developers have no idea what new genealogical traits may come of this massive genetic experiment, because genes tend to elicit multiple and sometimes unexpected characteristics. And since no official human testing of possible health effects have been scientifically published, can we logically conclude that their lack of product testing, safety regulations, and resistance to labeling means that they're hiding something, a giant human biological experiment, perhaps? Well, boys and girls, if the people of America cared, they simply wouldn't buy the product. If they're ignorant and they're not buying the product, then it's obvious that they don't care. Now, if people don't care, why should we care? I'm not concerned about these people that are ignorant. I mean, if you are, get out there and hustle them up and knock on their doors, you know, and start waking them up. But I'm not personally going to do that. Now, keep in mind that several million acres of GE soybeans and cotton are purportedly now infested with glyphosate-resistant and tolerant weeds. Glyphosate is the active ingredient in Roundup, which by design destroys all pests and invasive plants that come in contact with the crop. That's according to data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The number of glyphosate applications by farmers has risen considerably. It is shown that the more resistant the weeds become to the herbicide, the more chemicals the farmers will have to apply to the crops to get the same effects. Kind of like drugs, you know. You build up a tolerance to it. And that's what's happening here. The farmer goes out and he sprays on this chemical, this herbicide. And it kills the weeds, but it didn't kill them all. You know, one of them survives. And then each generation gets a little tougher and a little tougher, and pretty soon it takes more and more of the chemical in order to kill it. And then pretty soon you get to a point where no amount, this thing will become as immune, these weeds will become as immune as the crops themselves. Then what are you going to do? See, that's where this chemical agriculture is headed, and it becomes, at some point in time, it becomes unsustainable. And agriculture in America is unsustainable. And there are 13 reasons why it's unsustainable. 13 practices that are going on here. Not just in the United States, but, you know, around the world, because we've adopted this practice called chemical farming. Instead of organic biological farming, we've turned to chemical farming. You know, better living through chemistry. And that's what we were told when I was a youngster. Better living through chemistry. Well, all right, now we've got better living through chemistry, but now our agriculture is on a collision course with catastrophe. It's unsustainable. And there comes a point in time when you go past the tipping point, that there's no turning back. We've already passed the tipping point. It's long in the past. The tipping point's already been has already been passed. I was asked last night on a talk show if I thought that there was any hope of saving America, and I said absolutely none, zero, zilch. And like the Roman Empire, there came a tipping point, and once they passed the tipping point, there was no saving the empire. Now, individuals can save themselves in the same way that the Titanic cannot be saved because it's got a 300-foot hole down the side of it. It passed the tipping point when it hit the iceberg. It hasn't sunk yet. It's still big and imposing, sticks way up out of the water, but the ultimate end is it's going to sink. Individuals can save themselves off of the ship, but saving the ship is now impossible. And that's where we're at here. I'll show you as we progress along here that we've already passed the tipping point. You're not going to save the ship. You can save the individuals or some of them from off of it. And besides that, most of the individuals riding on the Titanic were very satisfied with the competent handling of the ship by its captain and its crew. Americans today, by and large, are very satisfied with the handling of the ship of state by the captain, Barack Obama, and the crew, the Congress of the United States. Now, these people may have complaints about the president. They may have complaints about Harry Reid or Nancy Pelosi and etc. But those complaints don't have anything to do with any particular rebellion against genetically engineered or genetically modified foods. The people of America, by and large, buy into science and by and large buy into GM. There's a small minority of people in the country that are opposed to it, and they're making a lot of noise. You know, people like me, we make a lot of noise. But that isn't going to change the course of the ship or the speed. Nobody's going to slow her down, and nobody's steering south. Now, that means that for all of us that are riding on this ship, there comes a point in time when it goes over the tipping point that all of us are on the ship that's going to sink. And all of us are going to get our feet wet before the night's over. Some of us will live, some of us will die. I want to be one of the guys that lives, and I'm assuming that you too want to be one of the guys that lives. Now, what has science revealed about the health effects in animals concerning these GM foods? Let me put my arrow right there. I'm going to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. And it can all be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download it right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements and recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Hungry Planet. Let me give you an update here. Hungry Planet, written by Peter Menzel and Faith D'Aluzio. That Faith D'Aluzio is spelled D apostrophe A-L-U-I-S-I-O. The book is available from Baker Creek Seeds, Mansfield, Missouri. And you can get them on the web at heirloomseeds.com, heirloomseeds.com. There are two collateral books that you should get on the subject matter, because what we're aiming for here is, can you feed yourself and your family on a limited budget over an extended period of time? I'm saying extended period of time, 4 years. That's our extended period. And the answer is yes, and there are 12 examples of that here in this book. And the book is entitled Hungry Planet. Now, there's two collateral books that deal with the genetic manipulation of seed. It's called Genetic Roulette and Seeds of Destruction. Two books, Genetic Roulette and Seeds of Destruction. Jeffrey M. Smith is the author of those two books. And those two books will explain to you the science and the reality of genetic modification. Science and reality. And then if you want to continue eating GM foods, well, go ahead. It wouldn't be any skin off my back. But there's an old saying in the book of Ezekiel. And Ezekiel, who was a prophet, was given a mission. He said, I want you to go tell the people of Israel. Give them a message from me. And he said, now, if you go give these people this message, and they don't listen to you, and they end up dead, that's no skin off your back, one way or the other. But if you don't take them this message, and they die, then I'm going to require it at your hand. Their blood, I'm going to require at your hand. But if they don't listen to you, well, then that's their blood is on their own head. Now, that was the mission that was given to Ezekiel. Conversely, here at the law school, we believe that everybody should be told. Everybody should have an opportunity to see both sides of the coin. That's what we see in our Constitution at Article 1, what deals with freedom of speech. And that everybody has a right to know. At least we think they have a right to know, and that somebody ought to tell them. Now, most of the time when you tell somebody something, it reminded me of old Winston Churchill. One day, Winston Churchill was walking down the street, and he ran into a lady who was an MP. She was an MP, a member of Parliament. And she said to Churchill, she said, "Winston Churchill, you are drunk." And Churchill said, "Madam, you are ugly." And she gasped in horror. And she said, "Well, you are drunk." And he said, "Quite so, my dear. But tomorrow I will be sober. And tomorrow you will still be ugly." And Churchill was right again. "And tomorrow you will still be facing the same problem that you've got today unless you take some kind of remedial action." Now, Winston Churchill made another observation one time, and he said, "Most men will stumble across the truth at some point in their life, but they will pick themselves up, brush themselves off, and hurry about their business as if not much of any consequence had occurred to them." Now, that's been my observation. You can sit here and tell people and preach them a sermon until hell freezes over, but it isn't going to change anything. But at least as Ezekiel was given the instruction, you know, at least, you know, the guy had an opportunity. Somebody told him, "This ship's going to sink. Wake up, smell the coffee, take a look at the signs that are all around you, and then see what that tells you." And what we call that is selective education. That is, we believe what we want to believe. And we will select what it is that we want to believe, and then that's what we're going to believe. And going on here, he says, "Genetic modification expert Arpad Pusztai of Scotland," this guy's a scientist now, "he was hired by Monsanto. And they paid him money, and they said, 'Now go take a look at this GE, feed it to rats and mice, and come back and give us a report. Tell us what you found.'" So, believing in the potential of GM foods, UC Berkeley's Ignacio Chapella and Arpad Pusztai, he's a plant genetic modification expert from Scotland, from the Rowett Research Institute, well, they were both fired after they were commissioned to conduct the first independent study of GM foods. Now, listen, that just goes to show you that this guy, Chapella and Pusztai over here, were a couple of spoilers, whistleblowers. And they didn't understand the politics of corporate America. If you want to get along, you have to go along. And, you know, when you're working for Monsanto, you got to give them the kind of report that they expect. You got to give them the kind of report that they're paying for. I mean, you can't tell these people the truth that these seeds kill animals or cause some kind of biologic repercussions. Well, here's what Arpad Pusztai and other scientists found out. And they were shocked at their results of animals fed GM food. So, if you got a pen and paper, write these down. I'll go a little slow here so you can write down. Here's what it does in animals, laboratory animals. Other independent studies showed stunted growth. Okay, so stunted growth, that's number one. Impaired immune systems. It will impair the immune systems. Bleeding stomachs. Makes their stomachs bleed. It gives them abnormal and potentially precancerous cell growth in their intestines. So you can just put down precancerous cell growth. It impaired blood cell development. Impaired blood cell development. It caused misshaped cell structures in the liver. The cell structures in the livers were misshaped. The pancreas and testicles were altered gene expression and cell metabolism. So there was altered gene expression and cell metabolism in the pancreas and testes. Liver and kidney lesions. Liver and kidney lesions. Partially atrophied livers. Atrophied. It means they're kind of shriveling up and dying away. Partially. Not totally, no, just partially. Inflamed kidneys. inflamed kidneys, less developed organs. Some of their organs didn't develop correctly. Reduced digestive enzymes. So evidently it killed a lot of the digestive enzymes. Higher blood sugar. Gave these animals high blood sugar. Kind of kissing cousin to diabetes. It inflamed lung tissue. Inflamed lung tissue. And it increased the death rates. Increased death rates. And they had higher offspring mortality. So they'd have offspring, but then the mortality rate in the offspring was higher than normal. You got all those written down? Now, to that, I would simply say, just because you see that in animals does not mean that it's going to react that way in humans. So I simply ask you, just because, now think about this for a minute, just because you do laboratory animal studies that stunted growth, impaired immune systems, bleeding stomachs, abnormal and potentially precancerous cell growth in the intestines, impaired blood cell development, misshaped cell structures in the liver, pancreas, and testes, altered gene expression and cell metabolism, liver and kidney lesions, partially atrophied livers, inflamed kidneys, less developed organs, reduced digestive enzymes, higher blood sugar, inflamed lung tissue, increased death rates, and higher offspring mortality. Would that be any reason for you to be cautious about eating this same food? What would make you think that it would do it in humans just because it did in laboratory rats and hamsters? Just answer me that. So, what these Monsanto scientists say, you know, you're just being alarmists. You don't have any empirical proof that this is going to happen in humans. And you know something? They're right. And that's because no human studies have ever been conducted. So, we don't know, do we? And we're not going to do any human studies because we don't want to know the answer, now, do we? I mean, we're out here to sell GM. We're not out here to find out what it does to people. That could be counterproductive. There's another thing. We're not going to put labels on the cans of beans that you're eating or on the cans of anything that you might buy that tell you that the contents contain GM, because some of you people out there wouldn't buy it. If you knew that it had genetically modified organisms in it, you would not buy it. And everybody that's in the food industry knows that. So, we're not going to put it on there. Now listen, every member of Congress knows precisely. It's been before the Congress two or three times, and they have voted it down. Three times that I know of, maybe more, but three times that I know of. Now, that tells you very plainly the Congress does not want you to know what's in the food you're buying. So you ought to ask the question, why not? What do they care? You know, if the Congress was unbiased, impartial, just their common sense would say, let's put a labeling requirement on here just in case there's a few people out there that might not want to buy GM. And so let's inform them so that they can make that decision. Now, on the other hand, if you voted against the labeling proposal, then there would have to be some agenda, wouldn't there? And the agenda would be, well, gee, if we put the labeling on there that said this product contains genetically modified organisms, some people might not buy the product because of that. Or put another way, if the people who are manufacturing the GM products were convinced that everybody wants it, wouldn't they put great big banner labeling on there that says this product contains the new genetically modified organisms? Buy two cans. This contains GM. Well, that's what they do when they want you to know that their can now has 10% more bacon in it, or this product now has more or less saturated fat, or it has less salt. They put big banners across there, don't they? So, you know, without going to Harvard or some big divinity school or something, do we really have to be geniuses to figure out who in the hell is working with who, against who in this controversy? I mean, let's wake up and smell the coffee here, kids. So the people that are making the product, the people that are using the product, and the people that are charged with protecting us from the product are all working together. They're all sleeping in the same bed, and they don't want to put it on the label so that you will know. Now, I'm going to tell you how you can know. Very simple. If it's marked organic and it doesn't contain GM, or if it does, it's inadvertent. So you buy organic. Second, if it contains cotton or cotton seed oil, if it contains canola oil, or comes from corn or soybeans, you can rest assured that it is GM. I mean, you can just bet on it. You can take it to the bank. Now, there are 40 products that have been authorized or permitted now by the FDA and Department of Agriculture for GM growing. There is some squash, there is some alfalfa, there's some other stuff, but it's pretty low. Your chances of getting a GM squash or a GM tomato are pretty low. They gave up on the Flavor Saver tomato. They gave up on the potatoes. They gave up on the RBGH in cows. It caused too much damage, and even the farmers wouldn't buy it. Cost them more money than it was worth. Now, it could well be, as time progresses along here, that genetic modification may just die from its own weight. It does not do anything that they said it was going to do. It doesn't produce greater bins and bushels, but it's got another downside to it. The food content, the nutritive value of this is far inferior to organic or open pollinated seed. In fact, I'll just tell you a little story here. I think I can. Dealing with a guy here named Adolf Steinbrom of Fairbanks, Iowa. Using open pollinated seed, Steinbrom's open pollinated corn contained 75% more crude protein, 875% more copper, 345% more iron, 205% more manganese, and the same result was also seen in the content of calcium, sodium, magnesium, and zinc. So there's that part of the story. So I wanted to show you that open pollinated seed. Now, if you want open pollinated seed, you can get that seed from Baker Creek Seeds in Mansfield, Missouri. Now, you need to act because the big seed companies like Monsanto are buying out and forcing out of business all of the little seed companies, of which this seed company in Mansfield, Baker Creek Seed, is one of them. The day will come, boys and girls, the day will come when you will not be able to buy an open pollinated seed in the open market. The monopolists are at work, and they want to make sure that they've got total control over the seed supply. So if you want to make sure that you get your seed, you get it now. Now listen to this story. Here's Senate Bill S-510, and it makes it illegal to grow, share, trade, or sell homegrown food. The day will come here in America, boys and girls, when your squash growing in your back garden will be illegal for you to give to your neighbor across the fence. Listen to this. S-510, the Food Safety Modernization Act of 2010. Doesn't that really sound good? It's called the Food Safety Modernization Act of 2010. It may be the most dangerous bill in the history of the United States. It is to our food what the bailout was to our economy, and only we can live without money. If accepted, S-510 would preclude the public's right to grow, own, trade, transport, share, feed, and eat each and every food that nature makes. It'll become the most offensive authority against the cultivation, trade, and consumption of food and agricultural products of one's own choice. It'll be unconstitutional and contrary to natural law, or, if you like, the will of God. But it will be the law of the land shortly. You can take that to the bank. The same people that have licensed this Monsanto monstrosity to give you genetically engineered food seeds is behind this Senate Bill S-510. And, you know, you don't have to be real smart to figure this out. Every time you give your neighbor a squash across the back fence is one less squash that Walmart sells in their grocery store. And they want to eliminate competition. As old John D. Rockefeller once observed, he said, competition is a sin. Competition is a sin. So you can take this one to the bank. You're going to get that one very shortly. The day will come when those of us that want to eat food that is not polluted and contaminated will be competing with the marijuana growers in the national forests for space to grow our open-pollinated tomatoes, peppers, squash, and corn. We will be competing with the marijuana growers. We will be hunted by the food police. And when we're found, they will prosecute us to the fullest extent of the law and jail us for growing tomatoes, peppers, potatoes, corn, and squash. How do you like that? Coming to a city near you shortly. Rob Edwards, environmental editor of Scotland's Sunday Herald, wrote of another study, genetically modified GM food could give you cancer. That is the stark warning today from one of Scotland's leading experts in tissue diseases. And Dr. Stanley Ewan, a consultant histopathologist at Aberdeen Royal Infirmary, says that a cauliflower mosaic virus used in GM foods could increase the risk of stomach and colon cancers. So how can they be trusted with our food? Boys and girls, if you cannot trust Monsanto, who can you trust? You mean to tell me that you wouldn't want to trust the Monsanto Corporation? The present Solutia plant, a spinoff of Monsanto Corporation, operates in western Anniston, Alabama. The Washington Post already exposed some of Monsanto's prior deceptive practices in January of 2002, when a staff writer by the name of Michael Grunewald published Monsanto Hid Decades of Pollution, PCBs Drenched Alabama Town, But No One Was Ever Told. Now, in case you didn't know, PCBs was a deadly toxin that was used in transformers, I recall, electric transformers. I won't have time to bring it to you this time, but next time we're going to take a look at PCBs from Monsanto. All right, meanwhile, I got to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, Thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.